Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In the haze of tragedy, I was a deer in the headlights, unaware that my hunter was about to arrive.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 576 for the week of August 18th, 2025. I am Onimus Poop. David T. Colin here with miserable Saul Freight, Sarah D. Bunting.
Your mom's the monster of Florence.
Treacherous translator Tara Ariano.
The English girls don't like her.
And bloody bath mat Eve Beatty.
It's my time of the month, though.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she is a writer, small business owner, and the co-creator of the Best Evidence newsletter. Not Sarah. It is her co-editor, Eve Beatty.
Welcome back, Eve. Look, it's not funny. Somebody died, but there was a poop involved.
There was a poop.
We saw.
I have questions about that. Don't worry.
I mean, if only all true crime could have a poop, I'd watch more.
Yeah, you would. We are, in fact, here to talk about...
A lot of it does. Surprising amount.
The twisted tale of Amanda Knox. In 2007, an English student named Meredith Kircher was murdered in her temporary home in Perugia, Italy, where she was studying abroad. Her roommate, Amanda Knox, was arrested along with Knox's boyfriend, Raffaele Sollecito. But there's a lot more to the story, which is dramatized in Hulu's new scripted true crime drama, The Twisted Tale of Amanda Knox, starring Grace Van Patten. And I looked it up. She is the niece of actor and pet food entrepreneur Dick. The show is created by KJ Steinberg, formerly of This Is Us, Mistresses, and get this, The Nine. Remember The Nine from the years after Lost?
Yeah.
She worked on that. That's her first credit. And the show's executive producers include Monica Lewinsky and Amanda Knox. The first two episodes dropped August 20th, with the remaining six dropping one at a time on Wednesdays. We got access to the whole season, but we'll be careful about spoilers, keeping in mind spoilers do not include true events that have been widely reported. Let's do the Chen check-in. Eve, should our listeners watch The Twisted Tale of Amanda Knox?
Yeah, sure.
Sarah?
Qualified no.
Dave? It's probably not for me either. I'm not surprised that we split this way because we have two crime sickos complimentary and two true crime abstainers here. Dave, do you have a little more on why it was up to you?
First of all, I hope the mastering process I do really doesn't destroy the quality raspberries that I do for the record.
Sure.
My problem was like, right away, I thought this whole production was overwrought. So I'm going to play for you the very beginning of the intro of the whole series where she's setting up the universe, I suppose.
On October 31st, 1986, at 1:28 and 32 seconds, a rebellious hooded crow leaves its formation and flies into the window of a courthouse in Tarrant. At that exact moment, inside his chambers, a young Italian magistrate sees the crow's death as an omen. His prayer turns to panic when his favorite book starts burning. And at the very same time, in the town of Coolston, South London, a much-loved little girl takes her very first steps. And at the exact same moment, in Seattle, Washington, after walking like Egyptians, a flapper and Billy the Kid lie down like the French. And 9 months later, a baby girl is born. Me.
So that is Amanda Knox setting up all the principal players of the series. And it lost me there how overwrought it was. And it did not win me back.
Yeah, I had a question about that. Like, what would our experts say about this tone? Because it seems like it's aiming for a little bit of like almost comedic elements, like in the style of The Dropout, sort of. But, you know, person died. Eve, what did you think of the way it opened?
Well, it was really interesting hearing that clip in a vacuum without the visuals, because it suddenly sounded like the next season of Only Murders in the Building.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Right, yeah. Down to like that music, right?
Yeah.
But you could imagine instead if it was just like a little more nasal, that this is like Mabel delivering these lines. I'm glad that you brought up like The Dropout, because that's the thing, is like when I was sort of thinking about this, I was like thinking like, you know, this sort of like belongs in that same category as The Dropout and the Anna Delvey show that I can't remember the name of.
Inventing Anna, I think they called it.
That's it.
Or even like Apple Cider Vinegar. Mm-hmm. Like they all sort of occupy this area. And then I thought, but those are all shows about women who are guilty. So I guess that's not quite fair to lump it in, but they all sort of serve that same vibe, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Sarah, what did you think?
You could make the argument that the series is trying to mirror or reflect the sort of what seemed to be the primary evidence against or allegation against Amanda Knox initially, which is that she was being tonally inappropriate in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of remains a slightly like off-center, off-label responses somehow, but that's not evidence of anything. So you could make that argument, but I don't think they make the connection explicit enough if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, going back to what Eve was saying about these sort of docudrami about women who are guilty or at the center of a big case, this one shares with those that it is very well acted. The lead inhabits the main character extremely effectively, but it's sniffing its own farts, in my opinion, a little too much, like way over-directed, overproduced, overthought, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it knows who it's for, unless it's just for Amanda Knox working some shit out, which is fine, but it doesn't mean that you have to watch that happen.
I don't know that I can necessarily shade her for that. She was, in my opinion, done an incredible wrong, but that doesn't mean all of this is necessary.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how does it affect you as a viewer when you find out the subject of a show like this has been involved in making it? Was it sort of coloring your experience of watching it?
I think, you know, like as a journalist, I'm like still like somewhat uncomfortable with some of that stuff. If this were like a documentary, I think I would feel a little more prickly about it. But after talking to more than one person who has been the subject of a true crime property, Margie from The Staircase, I've changed my position, and I sort of do feel like, especially when we're talking about something that's being made for like pure entertainment, which I think this arguably is, then they should be involved. And I think that they should also profit from it, you know, because otherwise I do think that we're talking about something that's pretty exploitative. So like, you know, I am sort of like good for her. And that's why I say like, yeah, sure. Like there's part of me that is like, just turn it on and let it play through, because I want Amanda Knox and Monica Lewinsky, you know, I want them to get the money. I want them to get the eyeballs. You know, you can like, do other stuff and you'll be fine. It's 8 episodes. You know, this is an interesting example of a woman sort of taking control of this narrative, and we don't see that often enough. So, you know, just let it run in the background while you do things.
Wow.
I will give the production credit. If she did have her thumb on the scale of things, how dumb she comes across at the start of the series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it gets speaks to a certain humility or self-awareness of where she was in this space at the time these events were happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, I just like that part of it. I was like, I don't know if I could continue watching somebody this obtuse in this situation. Like it kind of made me not anxious because I'm not involved, but a little angry because I was watching it as entertainment. As entertainment, I don't like this character.
Sarah, you were nodding. You agree.
Yeah. I mean, she, if you sort of like follow her on social media or like follow her activist career or commentary that she does about various properties, and she and Ryan Ferguson often do talks together about wrongful convictions and false confessions and stuff like that. She has a very good, wry, almost winky grasp of how she was perceived from the beginning. And like, she's very serious about making sure people understand, like, you know, that's not due process. That girl's cringe is not an indictable offense.
Yeah.
But like I always say, like there's sort of realistic and I mean, it's evocative, but it's not necessarily pleasing to watch. I don't think this is necessarily testimony that you, quote, have to sit through, mm-hmm. but this does sort of track for me with her current IRL persona of like understanding that even though it was wrong, she does understand how she came off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It just shouldn't have wound up with her in fucking prison.
Right. And it serves a narrative purpose in the show. When the crime scene is first being established, she's doing some real dumb things like making out with her boyfriend, like hours after all this happened, mm-hmm. and sort of stuttering through her Italian and, you know, getting translated through her boyfriend and sort of just saying dumb things out of nervous energy and all this sort of stuff. And all this plays into like the Italian authorities' sense that she is hiding something, that she is acting squirrely, mm-hmm. and that all plays into it. You know, later on there's some dubious translation going on in the station, and you know, the way that she is interviewed is in question. So all of those quirks of hers at the time, and you know, were we all so dumb back in, you know, when we were her age as well? But
yeah,
it does serve a purpose, but it's not necessarily, I didn't enjoy watching it. So yeah. It might have been true to it, but I kind of wish they could have massaged some of that, because some of those scenes where it is her just getting peppered by the Italian authorities, they go on so long. And I got the point 1 minute in and they go for 4 minutes. Yes, and I was just like, you got to edit this stuff down. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned like Amanda Knox's like thumb on the scale. If I were going to say where I see the thumb, it's like, there are no ellipses. It is, it's a total 100% of like every element that happened. And it's one of those things, like, as like a person consuming entertainment, I wanted to say, Amanda, just tell me what happened. And I don't know if Amanda identifies as neuroatypical and I am not a doctor, but I do see, you know, some elements of some of this stuff where this is a person who is very focused on, I'm going to explain things and I'm going to explain things accurately. And it's going to be like this. And it's going to be every single moment. Mm-hmm. And that maybe fills 8 episodes, but maybe that's one of the reasons that it is challenging to watch.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of speculation about her in that respect. But go ahead, Sarah.
I think she does identify as neurodivergent, but I'm also not a doctor and I cannot swear that my memory is correct on that.
And who among us, you know, who among us?
Well, really. Yeah. But also, even if she weren't, I think this is sort of the flip side of the coin of having the subject be an executive producer, that I don't need it to be objective and I don't need it not to have a point of view, just the opposite. I think that having the subject as the executive producer gives you a like greater force, confidence in the narrative, for lack of a better term, that like, I would rather have a strong point of view, even if I'm like, I don't know if I agree with this, but at least it has the courage of its convictions, if you'll excuse the pun. Mm. But flip side of that, the underbelly of it, is that who is going to tell the executive producer, like, we got it? Because that interrogation scene in the second episode, I think, is the one Dave's referring to. Like, it is very evocative at first, at a minute long. And then at 2 minutes long, you're really starting to feel it closing in on you, like it must have closed in on her. And mm-hmm. then at minute three, you're like, well, now this has been going on too long and it's lost its power. So I think the problem with having the subject as the executive producer is that you don't have as much like narrative or edit say as mm-hmm. you maybe should, in terms of being like, I understand why this is important to you, but the viewing experience is compromised by including every jot and tittle of what happened.
Well, yeah. I think there's another lost opportunity there too. And this is not me going to McDonald's and ordering a ribeye, but you have Sharon Horgan there. She's, you know, a very compelling actor. She's a very useful person. And the actual story around Amanda's mom, who posted up in Italy, who was this tireless advocate for her daughter, who was talking to the Times, who was doing all this stuff, is actually a hella interesting story. A lot more interesting than, hey, guess what? In prison, there's babies. And so there's something squandered there, that Sharon was not used better. Sharon did not have a dialect coach. And that Amanda's mom's story, which is a great story, did not get the opportunity to be told too, because there's this opportunity here to talk about, there were these other victims. There were these people around her who were suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a missed opportunity, that like set up from behind the shoulder of the mom, or mm-hmm. like each episode, it's like one episode is her, one episode is Raffaele, one episode is whoever. But mm-hmm. like, this story has been told and told and told. And if you are going to sort of give this testimony again, and not for nothing, put the Kircher family through it with you, because they're so over it, they're under it, and have been for 15 years, I think you have to do something new.
Yeah.
Or find something else to say that is not just as easily and more quickly served with the Wikipedia page. Like, I don't think this is badly done. And if you don't know the case, it might be great. Grace Van Patten is very good as Amanda Knox, but I just don't, it's not enough. It's not enough, I don't think.
Well, that's the problem. If you're interested in this case, you already read both of her books.
Right.
You saw her cameo in Laid last year on Peacock, a very bad show that mm-hmm. didn't like and got quickly canceled. Then when you decide you're still going to do this for all the people that are interested in crime generally, but don't know this story, and then you put it in the hands of someone who comes from primetime soaps, and then two executive producers that have their right to, but they kind of have their own axes to grind. Like, it's going to give a certain kind of focus to this that may or may not be what the story needs. Mm.
Over the course of the past week, I have interviewed two different authors of crime fiction who have said in various ways, so why does anyone watch true crime when you can just read the Wikipedia? Mm-hmm. And so these are people who arguably pay their bills on writing about crime, albeit, you know, like fictional crime. But even they are sort of, you know, at the point in sort of like the true crime arc where they question, this one woman's like, I could devote 8 hours of my life to watching a show, or I can read Wikipedia while I'm waiting in line at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in a case like this, that question becomes especially relevant because nobody's going into this series thinking we're going to have some new revelations or new insights about the case.
Got a lot of shows. It's a great time for shows.
It is time to go around the dial. First stop, as always, is with Tara.
Hello. Last week, I finished watching North of North on Netflix, in which Siaya, who is played by Anna Lamb, feels stifled as just the wife of Ting, Kelly William, basically the king of their town, Ice Cove, Nunavut. She decides to take her daughter and move back in with her mother, Nevi, played by Micah Harper, and basically starts adulthood from scratch by getting her first ever job working for the town under the demanding Helen, Mary Lynn Rice Cub from 24. Also shaking things up is the arrival of Alistair, Jay Ryan, and Kook, Brayden Clark, hot scientists vetting the town as the possible site for a polar research center. This is a production of the CBC, which means it is wholesome and life-affirming in the ways that you might expect from a public broadcaster, but it has a harder edge than I thought it would. Nevi is, for example, sober now, but wasn't always, and the long-term effects of that are still being felt in her relationship with Siaya, now that Siaya is in her 20s and a mother herself. Seems like Nevi is a better grandmother than she was a mother. There are also a lot of very dark jokes about residential schools that they just expect the audience to get, which I appreciate. And there's also fun to be had at the expense of Helen, a white lady with some authority in a community of indigenous people. But this is ultimately Anna Lamb's show. She is so winning and so cute as Siaya. I don't necessarily think this is a show for Sarah, but I would recommend that you scrub through just to look at her outfits when you live somewhere cold.
Okay.
You got to cover your butt, which is why you see her in a lot of really cute floral hoodies that are almost like mini dresses with a little ruffle at the bottom. Always pockets. Always.
Yes.
Coats are often cut high on the sides to give the wearer more shape. And it may go without saying, but beautiful beaded earrings are all over every episode, and furs, because they hunt seals there, are also involved.
Uh-huh.
I found a source for some of the pieces. I'll link it in the show notes. Something crazy happens at the end of the first episode that might put you off continuing to watch, even if you like the rest of it. Not violent or non-consensual, but something people regret later in a comedic way. And the fact that recommending the show requires including that caveat suggests to me that another taste pass should have happened to cut that. But if they wanted to create a buzzy moment to make sure that they would get picked up, it worked. And nothing wild in that way happens in the rest of the season. So give it a shot. It's already been picked up for a second season. It's a little Rutherford Falls, a little Schitt's Creek. It's nice, but with just enough acid to keep it from getting too corny. North of North. For my plug, I wrote about the series finale of And Just Like That, and somehow was maybe the only person to commentate on it that didn't include the fact that there's also a poop in that one. Just like, there's enough other literal shit to talk about without including that detail. But yes, a toilet does get backed up in the final moments of the show. So many weird choices. You will never convince me that was always conceived to be the way the series would end. But anyway, you can read that and more at the link in the show notes.
All right, Eve, what have you been watching recently?
Thank you, Tara, for having previously mentioned the Yogurt Shop Murders and a piece I wrote about it for Vanity Fair. I just wanted to bring it up again. If you watched the Amanda Knox show and you're in the mood for more elicited confessions, Yogurt Shop Murders also sort of like talks about that. Sort of the 1-2 punch of those shows will make you suddenly look at things like Law and Order Criminal Intent with a far more jaundiced eye than you might have already. I want to talk about Back to the Frontier. Does anybody else here watch it? Okay.
Mm-mm.
So listen, I was like, okay, let's just see what these ding dongs do when they go outside. The whole idea is it's like, hey, we're going to live the life of homesteaders in that sort of immediately post Civil War era where people came and claimed land that had belonged to indigenous people. They don't talk about that much on the show. And so they're living like homesteaders, like living off the land. And it's these three families and they're trying to figure it out. And the one family's two dudes and their son. Another family is cishet, mom, dad, two kids. The third is also cishet, mom, dad, three kids. One of the families is black. The other family is assholes. I started watching it thinking this would be a fun hate watch, but I have grown to actually care about all these people, which rarely happens to me at any time with anything. It's totally gamed. Like, they aren't really living. It's not like Survivor or something where they're starving or anything. Like, they, you know, go to the general store and stuff like that. But it is legit fun and interesting watching these people shit in a hole. So, sure. You know, just like to like stay with our theme. Mm-hmm. So if you see it when you're flipping through on HBO, just give it like 15 minutes, but be really careful because when you get to the end, it's going to try to make you watch Living Off the Grid instead, which is all of these extremely problematic prepper people. Like, you can tell these are people who drive trucks with stickers or you're their Google and trying to figure out what clan they're in. But the Homestead show, I definitely encourage you to watch it. So for my plug, I recently relaunched my personal blog as a newsletter. It's called The Pleat. It's pleatmag.com. So if you just want to see where I have been working, I would like to see where I'll be working too. We'll figure that out together. And just what I'm thinking, please come and sign up for it.
All right, Sarah, you're up.
I would like to talk about The Fixer. That, of course, is a show in which plumbers come and deal with a floating poo in people's houses. Just kidding. It's not. It is Marcus Lemonis' new show. It airs on Fox Fridays at 8. It's available on Hulu as well. I think most, if not all, of the season has dropped by now. The Fixer is technically not The Prophet. It's with a different corporate monolith. The investment, if there is one, comes at the end of the episode and not towards the beginning. But everything that made The Prophet compelling for process nerds who enjoyed it is present on The Fixer, and I think I'm going to keep watching it. Because as a small business owner, I am fascinated by the retail insights that he has, like where stuff is supposed to go in a shop's floor flow, how marketing consultants choose color schemes for different sectors of the market, the compromises that one makes for scalability, et cetera, and so on. I always liked The Prophet and liked picking it apart each week on Previously.tv. I enjoyed interviewing Lemonis that time. I like had his phone number in my phone. I like kept it across like two or three phones and then finally was like, I need to stop this. That's not a personality. But it does scratch the same itch as Shark Tank, just with less stupid. And not just because of the pitching investors aspect, but because you really get insight into what, quote, mainstream America is buying and is able to sell in a way that you really can't anywhere else. Like, some of these pitches roll in and you're like, it's a candle that smells like your first true love. That's not a thing. But then they're claiming six-figure grosses in their first year of business, and you have to accept that what you think should sell and what will sell are not the same. And obviously, I know this from running a bookshop and watching Ed Gein shit fly out the door same day while thoughtful, processy books on forgery will sit for literal years being eaten by literal bookworms. So there is something like, I don't know, soothing, affirming about seeing the same struggle for other businesses and seeing Lemonis gently but firmly correct people that should does not pay the bills. So yeah, once again, that's on Fox, which is unfortunate, but just watch it on Hulu. It all just needs to be a single channel that's beamed directly into the side of my head at this point. It's way simpler. If anyone cares, I can try to hunt up that Limonis interview from previously.tv. In the meantime, our esteemed colleague Andy Dennert did a great breakdown of the show and how it's different and not different from The Prophet at realityblurred.com, and that is also where Eve and I are still doing the true crime review equivalent of sipping delicately from a fire hose of content. Reality Blurred, right from the homepage, or bestevidence.fyi will take you there as well.
All right, here's what's coming up on Friday's Extra Extra Hot Grade, available to club members. It is the August Forcening, and we are being forced to watch Trial and Error's first episode of its second season. So if you want to hear that and you're not a club member, go to extrahotgrade.com/club to sign up. And a lot more beyond that. We got Ask EHG. We got a whole bunch of things waiting for you. And then come back here, EHG Prime, next week. We're going to be talking about Long Story Short with new guest Eli Uden.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Backwards canon music only means one thing. It is time for the No Knack, in which we discuss what is a terrible episode of an otherwise enjoyable TV show. Presenting this week, it is Tara.
It is Tara. Exactly 150 episodes ago, I pitched the Friends episode, The One with the Ball, to the No Knack. That one did not bounce in, but I have a good feeling about the badness of season 2, episode 10, The One with Russ. Here's why I think it's No Knack worthy. Number one, the A-plot is moronic. Mid-season 2 is Friends in its imperial period with no real time slot competition and huge cultural impact. The episode after this one includes a meta joke about people copying Rachel's haircut. The one after that is the two-parter that was the lead-out for the 1996 Super Bowl. There wasn't much the show couldn't do except get Rachel and Ross together before February sweeps. So for an episode airing January 4th, like this one did, the pretext for keeping them apart is Rachel's dating another guy, but his name is Russ, and he looks and sounds exactly like Ross because he's played by David Schwimmer in a neo-mullet wig and facial prosthetics. The character is credited to Snaro, apparently a reference to a friend of Schwimmer's. I found a story on Screen Rant about it. We'll link in the show notes. Everyone is disturbed to meet Ross's doppelganger, except the people most directly affected by his arrival in their lives, Rachel and Ross. When Phoebe tries to lead Rachel to the realization, Rachel just guesses he reminds Phoebe of Bob Saget. Ross also doesn't see how much he and his new rival have in common. Clip one.
She's dating? She's dating?
Yes, yes, but did you see who she was dating?
What do you mean?
Do you not see it?
See what? I don't know what she sees in that goober. And it takes him what? Like, I don't know. Hello? A week to get out a sentence?
Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it?
Yeah?
The next day, Phoebe tells Rachel straight out that Russ is Ross, but Rachel refuses to agree until she hears an inconsequential argument in stereo. Clip two.
For your information, it's a card sharp, not a card shark. You could not be more wrong. You could try, but you would not be successful.
Okay, I'm gonna get some more coffee before the pinching and eye poking begins.
I know what your problem is. Oh, you do, do you?
Mm-hmm.
You're jealous. Of what? You're jealous because I'm a real doctor. Hey, you're a doctor of gums. That's the smallest body part you can major in. It's like day one floss, day two. Here's your diploma.
Let me listen.
No, no. Let me finish.
No, let me finish.
No, you let me finish. Hi. Hi.
That's them both looking at Rachel at the same time as she walks over. I will grant that Ross could legitimately lack the self-awareness to recognize his own annoying habits when they're reflected back at him and Russ. But the joke, such as it is, about Russ's resemblance to Ross wouldn't work if it wasn't immediately apparent to the majority of the cast and the viewer. Rachel has never before been this oblivious about information in her field of vision. You can't even say Rachel's attraction to Russ is because she's refusing to let herself be attracted to Ross while she's still mad at him for ruining their burgeoning relationship before it started, back in The One with the List during, guess what, November sweeps. Anyway, here is her final word on her time with Russ, clip 3.
Ew.
The writers just thought they could get away with this cornball gimmick, and they did, until now. Number 2, the B-plot is offensive. Starring a play in which he achieved what one critic termed brilliant new levels of sucking hasn't stopped Joey from attracting interest from a Days of Our Live casting director named Lori. However, when Joey goes to see his agent Estelle after the audition, he has concerns. Clip 4.
The network casting lady.
Oh, isn't Lori a doll? Oh,
yeah, she's great, but I kind of got the feeling that she was sort of coming on to me. And I definitely would get the part if I would have, you know... if I would have sent a little general in.
Oh! I see. Well, I'm just gonna put in a call here, and we'll find out what's going on and straighten it out. Yeah, hi. Lori, please. Hi, darling. So, how about Joey Tribbiani for the part of the cab driver? Isn't he terrific? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay, doll, talk to you later. Yeah, you're gonna have to sleep with her.
Joey's upset about this, not because he's being sexually harassed at work, but because he wants to get hired for his talent and acting, not by sexually gratifying a gatekeeper in his industry. Chandler doesn't see the problem. He'll have sex with a woman he thinks is attractive, and he'll get a great job. Cool perspective, but I'll let Joey tell you how things go. Clip 5.
The callback go. Oh, it was unbelievable. I walked in there and she was all over me.
So what'd you do?
Well, I couldn't do it. I told her I didn't want to get the part that way.
Good for you. Wow.
Well, wait. But then after I left her office, she caught up with me at the elevator and offered me an even bigger part.
So, and?
So, you are now looking at Dr. Drake Ramore, neurosurgeon, recurring in at least 4 episodes! All right, I gotta go shower.
Worse than Joey's submission to sexual coercion is that his male friends bet against his withstanding it. Lori is kept entirely off screen. When Estelle calls her, we don't even hear Lori's half of the conversation, which I think meant the writing staff knew the storyline wouldn't play as well if we actually saw her abusing her power. As it is, Joey gets cast as Dr. Drake Ramore, a character he will continue playing on and off until the series finale of Friends. So the fact that his victimization, however cheerful he is about it, is a footnote to a major throughline for the whole show really sucks. Number 3, the C-plot is a slog and is also offensive. Monica has reunited with an ex, Fun Bobby, who we first met in the season 1 New Year's Eve episode. She's hopeful that it's going to work this time, and it can't hurt that her friends all love him. But when Rachel is collecting the empties after a chill weeknight hang at Monica's, they figure out Fun Bobby drank 3 bottles of wine on his own. The next day, when he pulls out his flask at Central Perk to make their coffees Irish, Monica gently points out that he's been doing that a lot lately. He tells her she isn't the first person to suggest that he drinks too much and that he would be willing to quit for her, whereupon he undergoes a complete personality change. Clip 6.
You want to hear something funny?
Oh, God, yes.
There are no hardware stores open past midnight in the village.
That is funny.
I needed to buy a hammer the other night, and I'm out walking around the neighborhood, but apparently
There are no hardware stores open past midnight in the village.
Say, honey, don't you have to be at your interview now?
Oh, yeah. See you guys.
Bye. Ridiculously dull, Bobby.
Oh, my God.
It's not that bad.
Not that bad? Did you not hear the hammer story?
Okay, don't get all squinky. Maybe it was just the kind of story where you had to be there.
But I'm gonna be there for the rest of my life. I mean, I can't break up with him. I'm the one who made him quit drinking. He's dull because of me.
All right, don't say that. He's probably always been dull. You just, you know, set it free.
Monica could only handle spending time with Fun Bobby by drinking excessively herself, so much that he finally tells her he thinks she may have a problem and that he's not strong enough to be in a codependent relationship right now. Relieved, she says goodbye, and that's a series wrap on Bobby, Fun and Otherwise. Instead of giving ridiculously dull Bobby more than a day or two to recalibrate into Fun Bobby, Sober Edition, Monica immediately gives up on him as the episode treats recovery not as a positive change for the person whose substance use has become disordered, but as a bummer for everyone around him. Sure, Fun Bobby is only a two-time guest star whose well-being we don't really have to care about, but still, yuck! With all due respect to the episode's funniest moment, Chandler reaching into a cookie jar that turns out to be full of red sauce Joey has just made out of stress, I feel this one sinks to the level of Nonak like whiskey into a central perk latte.
Thank you, Tara. Eve, why don't you start us off?
It was so uncomfortable looking at Matthew Perry during that plot, huh? I mean, that made it like almost unwatchable.
It's rough.
And my understanding is that people were aware on set that Matthew Perry had substance use disorder even at the time, and they were trying to support him. So I'm just trying to figure out how did all these adults who do this stuff not know anyone with problems with drugs or alcohol and think that this is like super hilarious?
Mm-hmm. Agree. The Fun Bobby becomes unfun, and that's a problem for Monica. Is just, I mean, everything that you guys have already said, like, it's sort of baffling that nobody in a Hollywood room, especially that Hollywood room, thought that there wasn't a better way to handle that that could still be funny and like let Monica be self-absorbed, but not this oblivious. Whatever that way was, it is not in evidence here. The Joey plot, Tara made the case extremely well that this is, it's just sour and gross and very mid-90s in that everyone's smoking cigars and pretending that they don't mind reading Penthouse, like cool girl way. I don't like that time was really just sort of like scabrously, quote, open-minded in ways that you look back at it now. And it's like, oh, that wasn't open-minded. That was actually sort of like not realizing that things were coercion and control. And then Russ Ross, it works better than it should, but it still doesn't work all that well. I think in a sort of more meta sense, my issue with this episode is it's not nearly funny enough to paper over any of this. Like, it's just not funny. And there's something about a Friends episode that isn't working, that like Friends is not really my jam, but I recognize that when it's operating at its peak powers, like actual canon episodes, you're like, yeah, that's how you make a sitcom. That's how you reel off a bunch of character and plot jokes. But when it's not firing on all cylinders and there's like too much space between the laughs or it's misbegotten, like this one is, you really see how much of the dialogue among and between characters is the same. Like with Phoebe excepted, a lot of the characters just talk exactly the same way. Yes, it's a friend group, but there should be a little more distinction between them. And a lazily written episode like this, you see the problem when that's not the case. Good episodes of Friends have an alchemy that like raises all the material and makes it greater than the sum of the parts, but a poor Friends episode, it's the opposite effect. And you really see like where the holes are, like right down to Fun Bobby's outfit. Like that is a mile of fabric in every garment. Like that turtleneck was for Andre the Giant. What
but that
is
was
happening?
The style at the time. That's not his fault.
No, I understand that was the style of the time, but even for the time.
Yeah.
Beautiful hair, though. Beautiful hair on that man. Kurt Russell level mane.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they make it a little droopy after he's dull Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's like peak Steven Weber in Wings hair.
Yeah.
And that is complimentary. Excellent presentation of a real floater of an episode. Agreed. Dave.
Yeah, I think the writer had a few ideas and just is going to cram them all into here. Be damned the consequences, because you've got the Russ storyline, which is extremely lazy and not true to the characters involved, as Tara lays out. Absolutely agree with that. You have the fun Bobby storyline, which is offensive in its own right. I can believe that the person writing this and a lot of people involved probably didn't have an idea of Matthew Perry's actual situation. They've only filmed one season so far and people hide this kind of stuff. So I'm not going to put that against it. But still, that storyline is just mean-spirited, really. And it doesn't really pay any dividends. Like, you can make mean-spirited comedy really funny, or you can make mean-spirited comedy that flops like a fish on the dock, and that's this.
Yeah.
It's weird that the Joey storyline about him having to reject a sexual advance, that storyline where he's going through the motions of actually having a conscience and wanting to succeed on merit, and then have it all disintegrate when he's given a better offer, is like the truest friends moment in this episode. It is also rather insulting.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the high mark of this episode. Joey fucking somebody to get a better job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the funniest part was the cookie jar. The other funny part, the only other funny part that made me laugh was the agents. This is my ecstatic face joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked that one too. Well, here it is.
Here it is.
And her little cigarette thing where she popped it and they all
her little cigarette carousel.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
I get the impression that the writer of this episode is on social media today in 2025 complaining about people getting canceled. That is the vibe of this episode to me. That sort of personality now, writing back in the day for the second season of Friends. That is the trajectory, I imagine, for that talent.
Well, as we're like talking about it, I have to wonder like where Seinfeld was in its peak of popularity when this episode was being developed, because I feel like if we took the elements of this plot and transferred it to Seinfeld, it probably would have worked. And it does, like, it is serving like a lot of Seinfeld. You can imagine a scenario where George has to, you know, hook up with some chick who works for the Yankees to get a job, and it suddenly feels like a little bit funny. Or Elaine is dating a Jerry lookalike. It suddenly feels palatable when we apply it using sort of the Seinfeld rubrics, but it doesn't work within Friends. But what I'm wondering is if somebody thought, we're the fucking lightweights, everyone thinks Seinfeld's great.
That's not a bad theory.
No, the same night as this, or the next night, Seinfeld aired The Switch, which is where Jerry wants to switch from dating a non-laughing woman to dating her roommate. And he and George crack this whole plan of like, you have to suggest a threesome so that your initial girlfriend will be so disgusted she breaks up with you, but the other girl will be flattered and she'll go out with you. So that's it was also the one where George enlists Kramer's mother to spy on his seemingly bulimic girlfriend. So that's definitely in the, you know, mean-spirited vein that you're suggesting. So perhaps there's something to that.
I mean, you're not supposed to expect, quote, better.
No,
from
that's
Seinfeld characters.
About.
That's the entire premise of the show. So,
exactly.
That's, I mean, Eve, you know, I think you are not a crackpot maybe for that. But I guess we should vote on this.
Yeah, there was also an episode where Jerry dated a girl who looked like him, played by Tracy Nelson. But back to Dave.
All right, let's put this to the vote. Eve, what say you? No knack worthy or not?
Absolutely no knack worthy.
Sarah D. Bunting.
You want to see my no knack face? Well, here it is. Yes, no knack worthy.
I'm going to say no knack worthy as well. So what's your pleasure, Tara? You want that karaoke version or you want the bad bonanza version?
Surprise me.
So.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
All right, that means for the No Knack Friends Season 2, Episode 10, the one with Russ, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great No Knack.
Oh, wow.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who is our winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do, but first, I have to, for the other UHF heads in the crowd, say, what's the matter? You don't like Bonanza? A line delivered by Mr. Michael Richards, who also played Kramer. Okay, back to it. This week's winner is Wendell Pierce, who played Bunk on The Wire, correctly saying that The Wire doesn't need a reboot. It doesn't. Was it perfect throughout? No. Could it have ended maybe a little stronger without some weird shit happening in season 5? Yes. Are these sins that need to be actively corrected in the record? Listen to Mr. Pierce. He is wise.
Antar, who is our loser of the week?
It's MSNBC because NBC Universal has sold the network to a company called Versant, which is the kind of thing where it's like they could sell anything from pharmaceuticals mm-hmm. to like flushable wet toilet paper. I have no idea. Versant means nothing.
It's Viridian Dynamics.
It very much is. But anyway, they are therefore, because they're not part of NBC anymore, changing their name to MS Now, which supposedly stands for My Source News Opinion World. Terrible. And as
Man,
of
woman television.
Yesterday, when I put this in the doc, MSNOW.com belongs to a website in Korea that sells snowmobiles because Neat. It's M Snows for snow machine. And MS-now.com can't do that either. It belongs to a Martha Stewart branded meal kit service. So great, great thoughts, everyone. Really due diligence done well.
What if it was a streaming service that only played My Sharona on demand? What then?
It may be. We don't know yet. They could go through a lot of programming changes.
Or someone reading Ms. Magazine aloud. Mm-hmm. I would actually pay for that.
Well, speaking about paying for it, do you know what time it is?
It's game time. Oh,
gotta be game time.
It is. Yes, it is game time. This is the second of the season. The season scores are Tara with 0, Sarah with 0, Value Guests leading with 1. Today, we're playing 3-4-all from Erica, who earns herself an extra credit topic of her choosing, plus a free shirt from the EHG store. That's at throughmethods.com. We played these before. I will remind you, in 3-4-all, I will start you off with 2 TV things with a common trait. Guess the commonality for 2 points. If you don't get it, I'm going to give you a third thing in that set. You guess here for 1 point. Here's an example from a previous round of the game. Here's your 2 TV things. 2.5 Men and the Conners. 2.5 Men and the Conners have something in common.
Chuck Lorre wrote on both of them.
Incorrect. Your third item is House of Cards. So you've got 2.5 Men, the Conners, and House of Cards. What is the common trait here?
Oh, shows where the star got fired.
That's right. It shows where the main character gets killed off because their actor is, capital A, a problem. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's how it's played. Let's get the steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah has 0. I have 1. Valued guest has Eric's meal, so 1.
Eric's meal turns over each week, so no harm in using it, Eve. You can only steal meal at the second part. I've already explained that you can guess at each level, Sarah. That better not be your question.
What? There's no Sarah here. I don't speak English. Shut up.
Have you seen my game time shame face? Here it is.
Here it is.
Let's throw it to the picky to see who's going.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Tara and then Eve and then Sarah will be our order today. Are we ready to play 3-4-all?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
All right. You've got Riley Keough and Allison Hannigan. They have something in common. What is it? If you don't get it here, I will give you a third.
They both played witches.
Your third clue is Tara Ariano favorite, Betty White.
Oh, no.
They all have something in common, but what is it?
They all played characters named Rose. No, they all play characters named after flowers.
I'll give it to you. You okay. corrected yeah. yourself pretty quick. We'll get that to you. Got Daisy Jones. So, we got Lily Aldrin from How I Met Your Mother and Rose Nyland from Golden Girls.
Right,
saved at the last moment.
Loose scoring there.
Mm-hmm. To Eve, your first two clues are King of the Hill and Young Sheldon. They have something in common, but what?
White people?
Technically correct. Your third item is Friday Night Lights. So you got King of the Hill, Young Sheldon, and Friday Night Light.
Set in Texas.
Set in Texas is correct. For a point. Sarah.
Yeah.
You've got Rob Lowe and Elizabeth Montgomery.
Rob Lowe and Elizabeth Montgomery.
Yes. Rob Lowe, everybody's favorite milk carton prop making dissatisfied actor.
A little bitch.
A little bitch.
Characters played characters named Sam.
Adding to that, we've got Ian Ziering.
Oh, I got it.
Ian Ziering.
Mm-hmm. I'll let you know you're in the right area with your first guess.
Mm-hmm.
Played characters with the word Steve somewhere in their name? Stevens?
Incorrect. Stanley is open.
I'll steal. They all played SS's.
Alliterative S named characters is correct. Sam Seaborn, Samantha Stevens, Steve Sanders. Sibilance.
If only Ian Ziering had been in a true crime TV movie, then that would also have been true.
Damn.
Back to Tara.
Yes.
You've got Pinkie Pie and Clarissa Darling.
Melissa Joan Hart characters.
You've also got Sonny Crockett.
Characters that have pet reptiles. Pet alligators.
Pet alligators is correct.
Okay.
Pinkie Pie from My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, as we all know. Clarissa Explains It All and Miami Vice all have pet alligators.
Huh.
Back to Eve, you've got Dennis Duffy and Hank Schrader.
Call people dummy?
I love that guess.
Your third item is Clark Kent or Superman. Dennis Duffy, Hank Schrader, Clark Kent, Superman.
All have beepers?
I don't think so. Anybody know this one? These are all played by characters named Dean.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
Dean Winters from 30 Rock, Dean Norris from Breaking Bad, and everybody's favorite ice agent, Dean Kane from Lois and...
Oh, yeah. Reek.
Back to Sarah. You've got...
Yes, sir.
Sarah. Christopher Maloney and Sarah Chalk.
Don't say amazing asses. Hers is only fine.
Yeah.
Of course, that was my first. Was my first thought.
And remember, they both humped refrigerators, but that was in movies, so we won't take it.
Both are characters primarily known by their last names. Oh no, sorry, Elliot's.
We'll give it to you. We gave it to Tara. We'll have to give it to Sarah.
Good job, Sarah.
Fair is fair. 2 point answer.
Mm-hmm.
Play characters named Elliot along with any guesses. Third one.
Elliot Ness, whoever played him?
No.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Robert Stack.
Oh, right.
Mr. Robots, Mr. Malik.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
All right, back to Tara.
Super triplet.
Yes.
You've got the Brood Witch.
No, oh, great.
And the Sloppy Jessica.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Burgers from Bob's Burgers.
Good guess. Your third item is the Teamster.
Sandwiches?
Sandwiches is correct. That was the Brood Witches from Regular Show.
Oh, right. Yes.
The Sloppy Jessica, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and the Teamster was the sandwich from 30 Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Eve. You've got Terry Bauer and Doyle. Simply Doyle. Terry Bauer, Doyle.
Demons?
Look, she was kind of a bitch, but let's be reasonable here.
She's Canadian. She can't be a demon.
Your third clue is Ned Stark. Terry Bauer, Doyle, Ned Stark.
Beheaded?
That's what I thought, too.
In the right area. characters that got killed off in season one of their shows.
Oh, okay.
All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Viva Laughlin and Sanford and Son.
Shows that took place in a junkyard?
Your third item is All in the Family. Viva Laughlin, Sanford and Son, All in the Family. What do they all have in common?
Oh, boy. All in the Family. Credits cast sang the theme song? Performed the theme song?
I would love to hear Red Fox singing Street Busters lyrics. Yeah. Here I'm collecting and selling junk with my son. He's not that into it. Any guesses? Mm-mm. These are all American remakes of UK shows.
Oh, right.
Viva Laughlin, based on Blackpool and also Viva Blackpool. Steptoe and Son, and Till Death Do Us Part. Tara, here's everybody's last question before we hit the score break. Happy Fun Ball, Levi's three-legged jeans.
Products from commercial parodies on SNL.
You are correct. 2 points. Third one was the Bass-O-Matic or the Bass-O-Matic. I don't even know what
Bass-O-Matic.
Is that their fish?
Do not taunt.
One? Yeah. Okay.
Any of these
could have been the guitar. I wasn't sure. All right, Eve, you've got Baba Black Sheep and Scrotal Recall.
Shoot, I actually feel like Scrotal Recall is familiar.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Get your balls to Mars.
Jokes Jake Peralta made on Brooklyn Nine-Nine? No.
All right. In addition to Baba Black Sheep and Scrotal Recall, you've got two guys, a girl, and a pizza place.
Something to do with Ryan Reynolds.
Nope. Anybody know this one?
Shows that changed their name.
Shows that underwent a name change is correct. Baba Black Sheep became Black Sheep Squadron. Scrotal Recall became Lovesick, and they dropped and a pizza place. Sarah D. Bunting, here you go. You've got Ted Mosby. Do you want to hear a little Ted Mosby singing? Just let me know.
No.
Ted Mosby and Michael.
Ted Mosby and Michael.
Michael.
Acts that are big in Japan.
Acts that are big in Japan is unfortunately incorrect. Adding to that, we've got Mike Brady.
I'll add a fourth. Elise Keaton.
Hey, you shut up. He says with utmost respect.
Michael?
While you're thinking.
Just take your headphones off, Sarah.
I won't be like my father, and I broke up with my mother. I got tired of her kisses, tired of her smotherings around my fingers. Let me punch and fuck shit up. The sight of blood and bone and bruises makes me feel like I have woken up to all the madness all around me.
I would have gone on forever. All right. It gets so much worse the more you hear that song. It's great. All right.
This time what bothers me the most is that the lack of effort. Like he doesn't even seem like this seems like a rehearsal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So to remind you, we're playing Game Time.
Yes. Architects.
Architects. Yeah. All right. We are well over halfway done. Let's get the scores.
Are we having an equalizer challenge zone?
Yes.
Okay. Then I have 6. Sarah has 3. Eve has 1.
All right. Eve, that means you are in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Prepare yourself.
Come on.
All right, Eve, you got to pick a number between 1 and 7.
6.
Unless you want to play the Friends trivia set in honor of the no-knack, which you don't, unless you're Tara, probably.
Thanks for the option.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, no.
I can let you know, this is my favorite box. I bought it at a yard sale. It is the Canadian-produced Teen Trivia Plus box. It is from 1984.
Okay.
And there are a whole bunch of questions on each. So we'll just play the card. I'm not going to try to hunt for TV stuff in these. We all got to live our lives, shall we?
Yeah.
But we're going to play 8 questions because there's 8 questions on the card. Okay. So here we go. Teen Trivia Plus. Which album by Duran Duran directly preceded their Seven and the Ragged Tiger?
Rio?
Rio is correct.
Woo!
The basic techniques of which water sport are called beating, running, and reaching? Options are surfing, scuba diving, or sailing.
Sailing.
You are correct. How many times per day is a devout Muslim supposed to pray? 5, 9, or 13? Get it wrong, you're racist.
I was just going to say, this is a hate crime if I get it wrong. 5.
You are correct. Which weekly magazine sells more issues, 1984, Time or Newsweek?
Time.
Time is correct. All right, you've got half. That means you're getting 3 points.
Woo!
3 points. So if you get the rest, we double it to 6.
Good luck.
In what language is niet the word for no?
Russian.
Fill in the blank. Joe, Blair, Natalie, and blank.
Tootie?
Hot damn.
What kind of eclipse, solar or lunar, occurs when the moon comes in between the Earth and the sun?
Solar.
You are correct. Get this. And it's a sweep. Is the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints the Church of the Mormons, Baptists, or the Quakers?
You can't give this question to a true crime expert.
No. Or anybody who lives anywhere, frankly.
That's true.
No. Let's hear it.
We know it is the Church of the Mormons.
And that's a sweep.
Big all right.
Points.
Big
damn.
Fucking points. I think we need an update.
We surely do.
Yeah, we do.
Sarah has 3. I have 6. Eve is now in the lead with 7.
Oh, shit. Thanks, Angel Moroni.
All right.
But like Joey, I did not get there honestly.
Everybody has 3 questions left.
Okay.
Tara.
Yes.
Emissary and Second Contact have what in common? Emissary, Second Contact.
They are both episodes of Star Trek. TNG?
I'm going to give that to you. They're just okay. Star Trek episodes in the Star Trek franchise. Emissary from Deep Space Nine. Second Contact from Lower Decks, and we had Encounter at Farpoint, Waiting in the Wings. That is the first episode of Next Generation, I think. I don't want to get angry letters. I think. Eve, Jack McKay, Lieutenant Shax.
Lieutenant Shax?
S-H-A-X-S.
People in law enforcement.
Also adding to that, Gus Fring.
People of Giancarlo Esposito pointed? No. Yes? No.
Any guesses? God.
Very different show. People who got blown up real good?
Blown up real good.
Oh,
characters that get killed or appear to get killed in explosions.
Appear to get killed. Thank you.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Your sweatpants.
You've got the animated series and Evolution.
Star Trek franchises that only lasted one season?
Adding to that, animated series, Evolution, and 97. Apostrophe 97.
Apostrophe 97.
The animated series, Evolution 97. Do you be quiet? No more hints from you, Tara.
Okay.
You know what I... Hang on. You know what I say to that hint, Tara? You gotta look at the screen.
No.
All right. What's your answer, sir?
Partridge Family Properties.
He was trying to help you.
It was my crossed arms X Family Feud style because the answer was the X-Men. X-Men Properties. Those are all names of X-Men TV shows.
Oh, okay. Good for them.
Tara.
Yeah.
You've got Wicked Little Town and Song Beneath the Song.
Songs that have been performed on Riverdale.
Adding to that, you've got Once More with Feeling.
Songs from musical episodes of CW shows.
I can't. It's musical episodes, the name of musical episodes from.
Oh, okay.
So that's you were fine. Close, but not quite there.
Okay.
This is question 17.
It's pretty cool.
Eve. You've got Walter O'Reilly and Benjamin Franklin Pierce.
Presidents?
Your third clue is Margaret Houlihan.
Irish Mafia.
Damn fine.
Man,
maybe.
I wish I had a steel meal.
No steel meals? Because I know everybody. Yeah, all right.
We're all out.
Sarah, what is this?
It's MASH characters who have nicknames that we know.
Right. These are
better.
The real names of MASH characters we usually know right. by
Loretta
others.
Loretta Swit just died. Now it is a hate crime.
Radar, yeah. Hawkeye, and Hot Lips.
Yeah.
All right. Back to Sarah. Roanoke and Hotel.
American Horror Story Seasons.
Yes. Good Hell for yeah. 2 points. Tara, this is question. No, 19. The average age of the soldiers in Vietnam.
I was playing while I was walking in to see The Naked Gun a couple of weeks ago.
Wow. Really?
Yep. At that just, bar at Alamo.
Just on the PA.
Yeah, you know the bar that's yeah, at yeah, Lake
yeah.
Line?
But that
yeah,
was
that's,
the,
that's
the...
what they were playing. I don't know.
Wow. All right. Weird. Tara, you
yes.
got the $50,000 steeplechase.
Okay.
And Grab That Dough.
British game shows.
Nope. Your third clue is Hollywood stars and celebrities. What do they know? Do they know things? Let's find out.
Fictional shows on BoJack Horseman.
Nope.
Just fictional shows.
Fictional in-show game shows. Let's say that.
Okay.
The $50,000 steeplechase, you may remember, it was the Ted Baxter is going to audition to be the host of the game show. That was
right.
the game show.
Right.
The Golden Girls had Grab That Dough, and BoJack Horseman was the last one. All right. To Eve, here is your last. You've got Jackie Payton, Carla Espinosa.
Waitresses?
Halle Adams is your last clue.
Names I do not recognize.
Maybe.
We're not
what
in
is
my
it,
kitchen.
Sarah?
ER nurses.
Not from the show. They are all nurses. Not necessarily from the ER, I think, right? Are they all ER nurses?
I don't remember.
Nurse Jackie?
I don't think, yeah.
Wait, who's the first one?
Nurse Jackie.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Sarah D. Bunting finishes us off with
yeah.
Monica and Jonathan Smith.
Doctor Who companions.
Your third clue is Castiel. Monica, Jonathan Smith, Castiel.
Angels?
Angels is correct. Yes,
woo!
Monica touched by an angel. Jonathan Smith, anybody?
John from Cincinnati?
Mm-mm. That's Michael Landon in Highway to Heaven.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
And Castiel is from Supernatural, a show I've never heard of before.
Glad I got that. I don't want Mademoiselle Caroline to come here and kick my ass.
That's regulation. We need the scores.
It was so close. Sarah finished with 6. Eve had 7. I had 8.
Oh, all right. Oh, so Tara wins, but we do have a tiebreaker here that we will play for a future steel meal because everybody has none. They're all used. All right, here we go.
True.
All of these characters have something in common. I will read them one at a time till someone shouts out the right answer. You get one guess per clue. So we'll do it that way. Here we go. Deputy District Attorney Joe Connor. Howard Silk.
Lawyers?
Matt the Bat Hardesty. Matt the Bat Hardesty.
People with big dongs.
Lenny Turtletrob.
Agents?
No.
Will Pope.
J.K. Simmons characters?
All are played by J.K.
Oh, wow.
Simmons. We had
nice.
Skoda and Schillinger waiting in the wings there for you. That's our last two
Skoda.
Clues. Nicely done.
Well done. Good job, Tara.
Tara.
All right. Thank you very much, Erica, for another edition of that game. One of my favorite formats for sure. That is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. We discussed whether the twisted tale of Amanda Knox was bene or scadente before going around the dial with stops at North of North. Did you like my Italian there? That was a very good. The Yogurt Shop Murders and the Fixer.
And Back to the Frontier.
Tara's goateed lookalike Tara got the one with Russ into the no-neck. We crowned winners and losers, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Erica. Next up is the August 4th inning pool on Extra Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
ew,
Sarah D. Bunting,
it's me, Isario,
and Eve Beatty.
Nobody asked me why I needed to buy a hammer after 8 p.m. in the village.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra on Crit.
Uh-huh. Okay, doll, talk to you later.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.